Well, that's the show right there. That's David Brown and the Harmony Project. And David Brown is one of my guests on today's program, The Song of the Three Davids on All Sides Weekend. Good morning. I'm Christopher Purdy. Delighted to have your company. We have David Brown from the Harmony Project here in the studio. We have David Philippi, who is the film curator at the Wexner Center for the Arts, our neighbor here on the OSU campus, who has a packed weekend of cinema revival and more to tell us about. And later in the broadcast, David Donsmeyer, the music director of the Pro Musica Chamber Orchestra, will be here with soprano Catherine Donsmeyer, and they will be talking about Pro Musica's 40th anniversary and a big gala celebration tomorrow night. But let's get to the good stuff, the first good stuff first. David Brown, welcome. David Philippi, welcome. The Harmony Project, give us a review 101, David Brown.
We're taking the whole year off. No.
Next joke.
Right. Well, the big stuff on the calendar coming up is June 6th is our big summer concert. And that is what we started last year, and it's free to the public. And the whole idea is to just level the playing field at Columbus Commons and have everybody treated equally. And as long as you get there early, you get a great seat. If you get there late, you get a bad seat.
Can you sing along?
Of course. There's going to be a lot of singing along. We're actually going to turn the whole park into a 7,500-voice choir and record the Beatles with a little help from my friends, with drones flying overhead. And it's going to be a lot of fun. And when I refer to us as being in the arts, it's definitely a little A arts, because what our goal is just to get everybody involved, to get the people who sit only in the theater seats, to get them up on the stage occasionally, to get the people who only stay in the background, to get them out under the spotlights and have every voice lifted up. So that's the big thing that we have coming up. Some of the smaller projects that we have that lead up to that. Our South High School program is now in its 8th year. And we have a 100% graduation rate in that program, which we are so happy about.
Hold that thought.
Yes.
Go back to Harmony Project 101 in case people haven't heard of the Harmony Project.
Don't even know what we are.
Let's start with that.
Fabulous. Okay. So Harmony Project is the combination of arts and social purpose. So it's getting people engaged through music. It's finding something that we have in common. And like Pelotonia is people who love bike riding. Harmony Project is people who love to sing or love music. And so it doesn't matter what your musical ability is. There's no audition to belong to any one of our programs. You can have a voice that is like nails on a chalkboard, or you can have a voice that should be featured on stage. But when you put all these voices together, it's a not too subtle social metaphor of the stronger voices lifting the weaker voices. Everyone who participates in a Harmony Project program must give back in service 8 hours per season. So it turns out to be 16 hours of volunteer service a year that they must give.
Now, give me a range of the places where people are volunteering in the community.
Sure. Well, literally last year there were 350 service projects. I mean, I could go through, but Godman Guild, Goodwill Columbus, Arc Industries, Alvis, Ronald McDonald House, Nationwide Children's Hospital, Ohio Reformatory for Women, schools, 17 different schools that we have children coming from to all of our programs. So you can go to Nationwide and sing with children who are hospitalized. You can go to Ronald McDonald House and make Rice Krispie Treats. But the idea that separates our volunteering from most is that we try to put you together with people who are from different zip codes, people who might vote differently than you, think differently than you. The goal is to work alongside people who you may not ever interact with.
Yeah, I'd like to meet people I never would have met otherwise.
Yeah, that's the whole point. And it's to try to connect. The harmony that we're going for is a social construct. It's not musical, but musical harmony is the byproduct of what we're doing.
Well, the concerts and the singing is more a kind of a reward or a celebration for the service project, maybe. But they are very inclusive. And how many voices are in your choir, current? Do you even know?
I don't know everyone's names, unfortunately, any longer. But our concert that we just had at Nationwide Arena in December, we had a little over 1,000 people in the choir. There was over 1,000 people in the cast, so we literally took up every space that was backstage at Nationwide Arena. But it was
Cher didn't do that. Well, her people, you know.
But Cher can do whatever she wants.
Just saying.
I mean, Cher is Cher. And I was at that concert. It was amazing. But it was a little over 1,000 people. It's third grade all the way through 86 years old. You know, LGBT, Republican, Democrat, Christian, Jewish, Muslim, Buddhist, Hindu, atheist, agnostic. It's everybody coming together.
The only criteria is you want to be there. That's it.
You want to be there, and you must give back in service to the community.
Right. Okay. David Brown and the Harmony Project. We're going to talk more about your specific outreach programs, of which there are many. I do want to talk to Dave Philippi for a moment, the film curator at the Wexner Center. When I see Cinema Revival at the Wexner Center, I think, well, that's what they do. That's what Dave does. He's been doing that for, 25 years. But this is something more focused and different, and it's this weekend. What's going on?
Right. So this weekend is our fifth annual Cinema Revival. It's a festival devoted to film restoration. It started last night, actually, and it continues this afternoon and tonight, all day Saturday, during the day on Sunday, and then screenings on Monday and Tuesday. And essentially, it kind of started, you know, just in attending film festivals or different conferences and things like that. I would hear people talking about their work in restoring different films. And, you know, a lot of times we would show those films, but the people, our audience, never got to hear from the people who put the work into restoring them. And sometimes it's really incredible, heroic stories to bring these films back to light. And we decided to focus it all in a festival format. And like I said, this is the fifth year that we've been doing it. And some of the guests have been here every year. The Criterion Collection has been very good to us, and they've been here they've been coming annually for about 10 years. Preservation experts from 20th Century Fox, Sony Pictures, the executive director of Martin Scorsese's Film Foundation will be coming back for a second time this
now,
year.
I'm looking at your propaganda online, and I'm seeing photographs of Hitchcock. I see Buster Keaton. I see Cary Grant. So these are all films being shown over the next long week, over this longest weekend, beginning last night.
Right.
Give me some of the titles and why. What is different about seeing them with you than seeing them from the library on a DVD or something?
Well, that's a great question. well, let's take a film like Alfred Hitchcock's Notorious. We're showing it Saturday at noon, and it's a film that, you know, a lot of people have seen before. But to see it, and you know, Criterion is putting it out on home video like they do with their titles. But to see it on the big screen, to see it with an audience, and frankly now to just see it in kind of the absolute perfect condition. You know, the sound has been restored, the picture has been restored. It's a completely different experience. And I would also say, you know, and I'm guilty of this too, when you're sitting at home watching something, I don't know anyone now who, you know, puts a movie in and sits there on their couch and watches it straight through. It's like the phone rings or you're hungry or you have to go to the bathroom and distraction after distraction. Whereas, you know, seeing it like this, your attention is 100% on the screen. And I just think it's, you know, that's just the way movies were meant to be seen.
Tell me about the Buster Keaton title, The Butler.
It's Battling Butler, and it's actually a film from the Cohen Film Collection, which is based in Columbus. Tim Lanza is the curator of it, and they've had the through different ownership, they've had the Keaton films.
The Silent? Is it a Silent?
It's a Silent. Yeah. It's kind of right in that sweet spot of films where he was making films like The General and the Navigator and films like that. People say that this is his personal favorite. It's a film that is not as it's not screened as often as some of his other films. And it's, you know, as it's a Buster Keaton film, it's hilarious. And it's about in order to woo a young woman, Buster has to pretend to be this kind of fearsome, well-known prize fighter. And of course, he's not. And you can imagine all of the comedy that ensues from that setup.
The Cinema Restoration Festival is at the Wexner Center this weekend, but there's always great film at the Wexner Center. That's because Dave Philippi is there. He is the director of film at the Wexner Center for the Arts. One aspect of the center's work that is all-encompassing in the arts, including theater and music and, of course, the visual arts, and a jewel that we have here in Central Ohio. And there is a new director coming in. Her name is Joanna Burton. She comes to us from New York.
Right.
What do you know about Joanna Burton? Come on.
Joanna Burton, she was at the New Museum in New York, and an incredibly well-respected person in the field, and I've actually only been able to spend a little bit of time with her, but her reputation precedes her. She's an incredibly smart curator, and it's going to be amazing what she brings to the Wexner Center. I think everyone is incredibly optimistic and is really looking forward to her arrival. She just seems great. I mean, in, you know, the interactions I've had with her so far, she's just going to be, you know, I think, great for not only the Wexner Center, but for the art scene in Columbus.
She brings a very high-profile reputation with her, so we look forward to meeting her when she gets to town. We're going to come back later with Dave Filippi and talk about Raiders of the Lost Ark, something related to that. Speaking of Raiders of the Lost Ark, David Brown, the Harmony Project, you mentioned the Ohio Reformatory for Women. When people go and see a Harmony Project, hear a Harmony Project concert in a theater, they're seeing, what, about 20% of the actual time that you spend doing other things, because you are all over the community. Talk about a little bit about the work that you do in prisons.
Sure. So at Ohio Reformatory for Women, first I want to start with the warden there, Warden Ronnie Burks, who was the state warden of the year in Ohio last year. She has really transformed that prison into a feeling of a campus, and that these women are all really focused on what's going to happen to them when they get out. It's all about rehabilitation and moving forward. Our program goes in and we work within the Tapestry program, which is a rehabilitation and recovery program inside of the prison, funded by Comp Drug and run by a woman named Annette Dominguez. And Annette has really shepherded the Harmony relationship with this program. We go in, meet with these women, we sing, we get together, they serve, they give back, and the way that they give back is to sing to children in South Africa. So through Skype, they perform, and this year, because of Kathy Kobacker's vision, we're actually going to take these women on a world tour. So we're actually going to perform and sing with people in all places all over the world.
Via Skype.
Okay.
You're not putting them on an airplane and going, yeah.
If the prison would let me,
yeah,
I would.
I know you would, yes.
I mean, it would be so much fun. But to watch the women, you know, you walk in and you see these women sitting there and their shoulders are up and their jaws are squared. And to see the music make their shoulders relax and make their faces relax and tears fill their eyes and the sense of emotion that they're allowed to express, which might be one of the only places that they've ever been safe to even be able to allow themselves to express themselves. And the music is something that allows these women to gain a strength in their own voice, to be able to speak to the pain that they've gone through, to speak to the situations that they've been in. We're very fortunate that we get to go there every Wednesday. And we
when
take
you say a, we, who do you mean? How many people go?
Between myself and a couple of staff, and then as anywhere between 5 and 10 volunteers go every single week.
And everybody in the Harmony Project, they're all volunteers who sing and do the community. Nobody gets paid, right?
No one gets paid to perform, right?
Right.
Only our musicians get paid. The artists get
paid. Well, yeah. Okay.
But we travel in, we go in, and the relationships that have formed are really magical. There are now 3 or 4 women singing in our 500 voice choir that were once incarcerated that are now on the outside. They have jobs. This is a great community that really gives women an opportunity and men an opportunity to kind of step back into life and understand that everybody makes mistakes. And most of these women that are incarcerated, we're all just one decision away from having been in their shoes.
Yeah, but for the grace of God, right?
Exactly.
We have to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more with David Filippi from the Wexner Center and David Brown from the Harmony Project. Don't go away. We are back talking with David Filippi, who is the film curator at the Wexner Center for the Arts, and David Brown, who is the Harmony Project. And I've said before that the Harmony Project is the best ambassador the city of Columbus could ever have. And it was founded by David Brown, who was here. And you were talking about work that you do in the Ohio Reformatory for Women. And you also are in a number of schools. So do you take the place of formal music education? How does that work in the schools?
It depends on the school. But let's use South High School as an example. South High School has a music program, but a lot of the kids don't choose to participate. Or, as in the case in many of the public school systems, the teacher is just assigned to students as opposed to students who have a musical desire to participate, yes, get shoved into the classroom. So we go in the afternoon and we accept, again, all students, regardless of their musical ability or whether they even care to sing. Some of these kids just want community. They're just looking for a safe space to belong. The neighborhood around South High School at 2:30 to 4 o'clock in the afternoon is one of the most dangerous places in town because these kids get jumped sometimes when they're going home. It's not a real friendly environment for these young kids. So we keep them there between 2:30 and 4 p.m. We feed them. For some of them, it's the last meal of the day. And then we use music. It's not necessarily, music that would be considered music education, but it's music that helps them find their voice. So we're doing a combination of the Black Eyed Peas and John Lennon's Power to the People, and they're studying about the First Amendment, which is the freedom of voice. And then they're going to go to the Gateway and watch the Nicolas Cage film National Treasure, and then they're going to Philadelphia and New York and going to all the places that they're seeing in the film. So we tie the song together with cultural and iconic things that they can kind of connect to. And then hopefully at the end of this process, as cheesy as it may sound to us, they discover that the treasure, that they are our treasure. And that's why we believe in them. And that's why we're there for them. We're in our seventh year there and going into our eighth year there. So we've seen kids go from seventh grade to college, which is kind of an amazing process to watch. We're also, we have about 17 other schools that participate in different programs that we have. Some run by a woman named Jen Robinson on the east side. She's at United Schools Network. She's also at KIPP Columbus.
So you see the lights go on.
Totally.
In a kid's eyes, in a kid's face.
Totally. Yeah. And you see them understand that perhaps they have more choice and more say over their futures than they've been told that they have.
Well, if you're taking some of these young people on road trips to places that they read about, I'm from Lexington, Massachusetts, which is where the American Revolution began. And if you ever want to go there, call me up and we'll go, all right?
Sure.
I'll lead the tour over there.
Absolutely.
David Brown of the Harmony Project. We're going to have a bit more with him later. David Philippi. Now, y'all writing this down? We have Davids here, okay? It's David Philippi is the Wexner Center, and David Brown is the Harmony Project. David Philippi, let's discuss Raiders of the Lost Ark, which everybody knows, and is germane to the Wexner Center.
Next weekend, on Saturday, March 2nd, we're going to be hosting two Oscar-winning special effects artists, Ben Burt, who's a longtime sound effects artist, and Craig Barron, who's a visual effects artist. And if people would Google them and look up their respective filmographies, it's nothing short of astonishing. They've worked on almost all of the Star Wars films, E.T., Curious Case of Benjamin Button, Zodiac, on and on and on. And I was lucky enough at a conference at the Academy last August to see them. They're also forensic special effects historians. So they'll go back and look at old films and try to figure out how the special effects were done on those films and then do presentations on them. And that's what I saw. And their presentation, they did one on War of the Worlds and then one kind of on a number of films produced by Paramount. And it was so riveting and just entertaining and interesting. And it was another example of, I wish our audience could see something like this. And so I approached them and asked if they'd be interested in coming to the Wexner Center, and they were. And for the first time, they're going to do a presentation on a film that they worked on. Usually all of their presentations are about other people's work, and this will be the first one on their own. And they said they've been kind of working on a Raiders of the Lost Ark program for quite some time, and they're going to do a presentation on the behind-the-scenes making of Raiders.
They're going to deconstruct the film in a way?
Yeah, like how is this affecting? And if you think through the special effects in Raiders, it's something.
Yeah.
If I could just give one example of how fascinating it is. Ben was telling a story about the Charlton Heston version of Ten Commandments, the 50s version. And there's a scene where God comes down and writes, in lightning on the Ten Commandments. And there's this wonderful crackling sound. And he tracked down the person who invented that sound effect And he later used that sound effect when you're watching Star Wars and you hear the lightsabers hit each other, that crackling sound. He took that from Ten Commandments. So just things like that behind the scenes. I mean, one after another, he did the heavy breathing for Darth Vader. He did the voice of Wall-E in the Pixar film Wall-E. They're a fascinating pair. And this is one of those, if you like movies at all, you want to be there.
You're going to be mobbed. There's going to be lines around the Western Center.
So,
when is that, so people can sleep out and get tickets?
It's Saturday, 7 o'clock, March 2nd. The tickets are on our website. We're also doing a free program that afternoon, 4:30, that's more general, and it's only for students, but that could be elementary school, high school, college students.
Oh, great.
And that's free, and it's going to be just more of an opportunity for kids to ask questions, about their work. And we are going to be really strict. If a parent comes with their kid, the parent's going to have to spend the time in the bookstore, and we want to make sure as many kids get a chance to
go buy the catalog. The kid's going in to watch special effects.
And that's at 4:30, and it's completely free.
And it's March 2nd. It's a week from tomorrow, right, at the Wexner Center. Currently, Cinema Revival, a festival of film restoration running through, I guess, Tuesday.
Tuesday night's the last screening.
Okay. Yep. Give me some of the titles that we can see?
Sure. Tonight, the David Byrne film True Stories, which is a kind of a cult film from the 80s. Tomorrow at noon, Alfred Hitchcock's Notorious. Tomorrow at 2:30, one of the best restoration stories of the weekend, the classic film noir Detour. Tomorrow night, the 80s hit White Nights with Mikhail Brishnikov and Gregory Hines. And then I guess I'll just kind of call out, especially on Tuesday, we're showing a film called Claudine, which stars Diane Carroll and James Earl Jones. And it's a film a lot of people, have forgotten about or have never heard of. And it's this amazing film about a single mother in Harlem in the 70s and just dealing with the ridiculous bureaucracy of the welfare system.
I remember when that film opened, I think it was 1974 or 75,
right.
when that film was brand new. And there was a lot of controversy about that film and a lot of conversation about it.
Yeah.
And sometimes people were so busy having conversation, they forgot to look at the film. The film. It's a wonderful film.
It's an amazing film.
I'm going to come to that. I'd love to see that in a big theater with other people, as you said.
And just Simone Drake, who's the chair of Ohio State's African American and African Studies Department, will be leading a conversation after that screening.
What's the web? Wexarts.org?
Wexarts.org.
Wexarts.org. Go there for all the information about all the programs in the Wexner Center, especially Dave Filippi's work with film. David Brown, now I wanted to sort of detour a little bit with a bit of a personal story, if you don't mind. You are our dad now.
Adopted dad, right?
Since I first met you, you have now become a dad. You've adopted two young men. They were kids when they came to you.
16, yeah.
tell that story, and how are they doing now?
Well, so they were both part of our South High Harmony program, and you know that they're good kids when you don't know them that well, because it's the kids that create the trouble that you actually get to know most. And so I knew both Chris and Kool-Aid as young boys who always showed up and helped set up chairs. And Chris had been interviewed once by NBC4 and, broke my heart whenever he said, well, I come to Harmony Project because of Donato's Pizza. And I was like, well, if the pizza got him there, who cares? And Kool-Aid, I get a call from Chris one night that Kool-Aid was in a little trouble, and his family was kind of in chaos, and they didn't know who to turn to, and I get involved and find out that the family are immigrants from Liberia, traumatized from escaping that country, a lot of repeated trauma throughout the years that Kool-Aid had been moved from school to school, state to state. Remarkable that the kid was even functioning as he was. And
he was in school.
They were both at South.
School. Yeah.
Not doing real well
but
in
they
the
were
grades.
There,
but they were there.
Yeah.
Attendance was pretty bad, like a lot of the kids, because there was no parental influence there to get them going. I don't think I would have gotten up and gone to school every day if there hadn't been somebody to pull the covers back and turn the lights on, There was no one to go to court for Kool-Aid, and I found myself sitting in court on my birthday in juvenile court.
And I remember that because you were supposed to be here that day.
Yes.
Yes. You called and said, I have to go to court.
I have to go to court.
Oh, really? And then you explained why.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I'm sitting there and the magistrate, Woody Hudson, says, are you willing to take some responsibility for this young man, you know? And I didn't know what that all meant, but I was like, okay, let's figure this out. I didn't know if it would be long term or short term. Flash forward. He comes to live with me, and then his friend Chris comes to stay with us for a night, to spend the night as a friend. And Chris's mother and family was in some chaos, and she found another place to live and moved and had to leave him behind. And so suddenly there was two. And all of my friends said, two kids are easier than one. you might want to consider keeping them because they can keep themselves occupied. Mm-hmm. And, through the process, it's been a learning process for me. It has definitely changed the way that I think about life. I didn't realize how self-involved my world was and my life was until there was someone else to have to be responsible for. I had to learn how to cook. They had to learn how to eat what I cooked. And now they're both at Capitol. I mean, I'm leaving out all these pieces, but they're both at Capitol and in their junior years in college. They went to Columbus State, which I just – every time I get a chance to praise Columbus State and Dave Harrison's leadership, I do.
They did wonders for my daughter, who's a graduate of Columbus
State.
I'm very grateful as well.
And then what Beth Paul is doing at Capitol with her leadership there, it's really remarkable. But I can't speak about them without talking about, you know, the community that came around us in Columbus to allow us to be a family. I don't think this would have ever been able to happen in New York or Los Angeles. Friendships and relationships and doctors and psychologists and even on the day that our adoption, I have to tell the story. I don't think I've ever told this story before. On the day of our adoption, I show up at the courthouse and standing in the lobby is Doug Kreidler from the Columbus Foundation. And he said, I'm not able to stay for the adoption proceeding, but I wanted to give you three something. And he and several others had come together and formed a family fund at the Columbus Foundation so that the boys would have the opportunity to learn how to be philanthropists, to learn how to give, to support other people in the community. And so now the boys and I sit down together and we look at our fund every year and we look at the organizations in town and we talk about what they're doing and the boys get to make the decisions about who gets the money.
And, you know, Doug Kreidler would never tell that story about himself.
And he might not want that story to be told, but
well,
I don't
bad.
Care.
he's a very self-effacing but infinitely generous man. So
right.
I'm glad to be able to. I'll say it too. I don't care either.
Okay,
Doug and Monica, I love you both.
I do too.
So they're yours now, right? That's it.
Well, I mean, we're each other's.
Okay.
You know. They made the choice. They wanted to take the last name. We now have birth certificates that list me as their father, which is the craziest thing in the world.
Were you living alone and then going to living with two young men?
I was living by myself in a tiny little house in German Village. And they moved in and I moved to the sofa and they took over the two little bedrooms. And then now we're in a little bit bigger, have a little
house,
more space,
right,
bigger
yeah.
room. But, you know, I would say that I've learned probably as much from them as maybe they've learned from me. And it's changed the way I look at the world. And it's I think it's changed the way that they look at themselves.
Where's the damn Kleenex? Anyway, David Brown, that's a wonderful story. And I didn't mean to put you on the spot, but I wanted you to tell that story because
sure.
it's important that people hear about that. And who knows, you may inspire somebody else.
Well, don't give up on teenagers in foster care.
Yeah.
That's the lesson here.
Okay. Don't give up. Don't give up, period. And we're not going to give up going to the Wexner Center to see film and to see Cinema Revival. And Dave Filippi, you know, when you look at the catalog of film, probably you can't count them all. However, do you just to hone it down to what you want to present at the Wexner Center?
It's really it's complicated and simple. I work with my colleague Chris Stoltz, and we put the program together. And it's a combination of things that are current and important and made by the leading filmmakers of the day. It's something that we think will be important to campus or the community in some way. It's things that we just have a very personal interest in. It's kind of all of those things blended together. And we're very selective. Obviously, we have one screen, and we have to be very selective by nature. And It's just trying to balance all of the interests of our various constituencies. You know, we're part of the OSU campus. We're part of the Columbus community. But we're also part of the broader art world, you know, national and international. And it's just kind of all of those things. I wish I need to come up with a better answer for this question because I get asked it a lot.
It's a great answer.
It's kind of all of those things and just trying to be intuit, you know, what makes sense for the center at this time.
And a week from tomorrow for students at the Wexner Center for free. No adults allowed. You have to go to the bookstore or the cafe. But for students, just
in the afternoon at 4:30, and then at 7 o'clock is for the general public.
And that is the special effects presentation, with,
right?
Going around
specific to Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Okay, right. That's for everybody.
If you have
there.
Questions about lightsabers, you can ask those at the 4:30.
That's right, for free if you're a student.
Yes, exactly.
If you're a parent, forget about it. You have to pay and come at 7. And more information, the website is wexarts.org.
Yes.
And David Brown, when you leave here, where do you go next? PTA.
I don't remember. I know I have a couple of phone conference calls this afternoon, but I don't know what else
How
today
often
is.
Do you rehearse with a big choir?
We rehearse every Monday evening.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What room is big enough to accommodate everybody?
Well, right now we're rehearsing up at Northland Performing Arts Center room for 500.
Great.
And we cram them all in there and we work. But we're always looking for innovative ways to kind of like have open rehearsals so that anybody could come in and participate, like big open spaces, because the idea is just to get people engaged and to get them using their voice in a creative way.
We might have to have you at the airport in a hangar.
I would love that.
You're going, then. Thank you, David Brown, the director of the Harmony Project,
you,
and all the work you do in the community. Thank you, Dave Phillippe at the Wexner Center for Film. Much going on. Go to wexarts.org. I'm Christopher Purdy. Don't go away. Coming up in a moment, David Donsmeyer and Catherine Donsmeyer from ProMusica. Don't go away. We are back, All Sides Weekend. I'm Christopher Purdy. It is my joy to introduce the first couple of music in Columbus. Catherine Donsmeyer, soprano, recently starred as Franz Lehár's The Merry Widow with Opera Project Columbus. That's one of the many projects she has going on with her voice and her career. And she brought along, I didn't ask you to, but she brought along your husband, David Donsmeyer, who is the music director and conductor of our own ProMusica Chamber Orchestra. I've called this program today The Song of the Three Davids Plus Diva. So four D's here.
Yes.
ProMusica is currently celebrating its 40th anniversary season. You haven't been there for all 40 years, David, because you're probably not yet 40 years old, but I'm more than 40 years old. And there's a big celebration tomorrow night. What's going on tomorrow night?
So tomorrow we have the gala with John Batiste. He's a really, really great artist. And the tickets are close to sold out. I spoke with Janet right before this show, and she said we're getting really close to a sellout. So if anybody thinks about buying tickets for that,
do it now.
Yeah, do it. I mean, that's not a joke, because often people say that they're like, oh, we're going to sell out. But actually, no, if you don't get now to buy tickets, you will miss out, most
and
probably.
And John, is the music director for Stephen Colbert.
Yeah, he's on the Steve. He's one of these guys pretty much everybody knows, because when you watch the Steve Colbert show, it's like, you know, you see him there all the time, and he's the guy who improvises. You know, he's such an important part of that show. You know, when you watch it with different eyes, he all the time improvises some things while Steve is talking. He's great, a great artist and classically trained as well. So he's both in both worlds. I'm really looking forward to work with him.
You and Catherine come to us, if I'm correct, from Salzburg, Austria.
I come from Salzburg. She doesn't. She's a German.
I'm Bavarian.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's a bad thing. My bad. You're Bayerisch, right?
Bayerisch.
Yeah, Bayerisch. Well, anyway, you both spoke German before you spoke English. Is that fair to say,
yeah,
maybe?
That is
okay.
Fair to say.
How long have you been at ProMusica?
I think I'm in my sixth or seventh
year.
But it's very difficult to say, because I came as a guest conductor, and then I was music director designate, and then I started as music director. So I think officially it's my sixth season, but I haven't looked.
And so here's what everybody asks me. Here's what everybody asks me. So the So he conducts the Columbus Symphony, and I say,
no, I don't.
No,
no, they should live so long. No, he conducts Pro Musica. Well, what's they know what Pro Musica is, but they think it's part of the Columbus Symphony.
No, it's not.
So let's do that once and for all. Tell me about Pro Musica.
That's good. Let's clarify that like clearly. So Pro Musica, it's just very much its own entity. We're a chamber orchestra. We're the Chamber Orchestra of Columbus.
Meaning it's like 30 people.
It's 35. We have 35 members. Chamber orchestras are defined, one, by their size, but also by their outlook on how to play music. So chamber orchestras are generally very motivated, very brilliant. Every player needs to be extremely good. You know, you cannot hide in a chamber orchestra. Even in the string sections, everybody has to play to an extremely high standard. You know, there is no hiding away, and our musicians are all brilliant. Also, we are a really national orchestra, so we are flying people in from all over the U.S., and we provide for the flights, and we provide accommodation. And so that's something that makes Pro Musica, even in chamber orchestra world, very special. You know, we are kind of the all-American chamber orchestra in some way.
And you've also begun touring in the summer to the Chicago
area. We did, and we will go again to Chicago. We've been immediately reinvited, and we're looking at other touring opportunities quite soon. So, yeah, the touring really starts, and looking at recording projects. I mean, Pro Musica has become really world-class orchestra.
Do you have your own audience aside from symphony?
Yeah, we have our own audience. There might be some overlap. I think there are like 10 to 20 people maybe who go to both.
10 to 20. Don't be calling me up on the phone. I didn't say that. You know, right?
Yeah, we have our own audience, very much so.
You have yourself.
Very loyal.
I like it.
Catherine Donsmeyer, you are trained as an opera and concert singer. The Merry Widow was not your debut in Columbus. You certainly have been singing since you first got here. What's it like having two musicians in the same house, and how horrible is that?
It can be very noisy, that's for sure, because of me. It's always difficult, to be honest, and I'm very honest, that he needs quiet time, right? He needs to study his scores.
Good. Tell him to go in the garage.
Yeah. No, yes. No, garage is not far away enough. I could go to our neighbor's house.
I tell him
house.
To leave.
Oh, come on.
Just leave the house.
She's a properly trained singer. When she sings, like, you know, I could go 10 houses away and still hear her.
It's very interesting. So it's like a schedule. It's like we have to be arranged. Yes,
I practice here. That means you can't be here. And I need quiet means you can't sing.
Yeah, so I'm catching him on a break.
But you have a couple of kids, too. How does that work out with
the quiet? Yeah, it's not easy. I mean, it works. I mean, they're in school. And if they're off school, we keep them entertained. So... And so he's not all the time here. So that's also good with the schedule.
You've worked with Opera Columbus. You've worked with Opera Project Columbus. Mm-hmm. Tell me about those experiences. The recent run in the Lincoln Theater, they had sold out houses.
For the
Merry Widow. It's radio, but you looked fabulous and sounded
thank
great.
You. Thanks for coming.
So tell me about those experiences working there. Singing there.
I've worked with Opera Project also before.
Yes.
So I've done a smaller role. It's always a pleasure to see them again and work with them because they're really good people. And so being there back on stage was brilliant. And it was my debut for Hannah. And I always wanted to do that. The Lehar piece. Yeah, always wanted to do it.
Yes.
And that was the chance. And... I was very excited about it and glad it went so good.
It did.
Well, and
she was just happy that all the guys paid attention. On
yeah,
stage
that
to
was
her.
So good too. To be honest,
well, actually, they did. They were literally falling all over her.
I
blame them.
I can
it was
imagine
hard to
that
breathe
must be fun.
At some time. You know, it was like.
Good problem to have, though. I
mean, so like really? So it was very funny in rehearsals, too, when we practiced for the couch scene and the men fall over me. And then I had a laugh attack so hard. I could not sing anymore. And everybody was just laughing because your space gets invaded so much and they're crawling into you that like, oh my God, what am I going to do? And it was fun.
You were off studying because you'd be having quiet.
I flew back.
Was abroad.
I came to the after party.
Okay. Yes.
All right.
I came to the after party. I flew in and straight drove to the after party.
Pro Musica has had 40 seasons. It was begun by Timothy Russell and some friends of him. And Timothy was a big, big mover in music in Columbus. Happy to say he's alive and well and busy. So not in Columbus. they have become known as the orchestra that commissions a lot of new music. They have very eclectic programs. If you don't like something that they play, wait 5 minutes because you'll love the next thing. And that's really true. So what's your strategy as the years now go on for the next couple of years? How are you going to build on that reputation? Are you going to change it? Or what's going to go on?
I think we've in some ways tied it a little bit up. You know, I thought like when I looked at programs before my time, they were indeed very eclectic and there is something really nice about it. When I came, I think Janet and I looked for a little bit more structure as well, you know, to kind of like have themes running for the whole season. Most of our seasons have kind of like themes that bind the whole season together, also kind of like making the programs as logical as possible. But still, and I think that's also a strength, you know, you will very often come to our concerts and have a good mix of old pieces, new pieces. And like you said, we're trying different things out. I think my taste is very different in some ways from Tim's taste. And so I think the commissions that we are doing and like the pieces that you hear at our programs have changed also in style. Also the new pieces, like who we commission, who are the composers, who we are commissioning and so. But I still think, you know, and music is something that's alive. You know, I'm always interested how a commission turns out. Can be, you know, pretty terrible, can be pretty wonderful. And that was always like that. Like in Mozart's time, not everybody was a Mozart. So yeah. you gotta give
true.
People chances.
That's true. Well, when you sit down, Janet Chen is the executive director of ProMusica, yeah. And I'll say it again, and she's bored having me say this. She is the best arts administrator I've ever met, and I've been around the ballpark.
She's absolutely brilliant.
She is. When you two decide, okay, in 2022, we need to have two new works. So who are we going to ask? What kind of work are we going to have? How is that decision? Because you need lead time to make that decision.
Yeah, we that's the great thing about working with Janet. We both agree that we have to plan ahead. And actually, we're starting to plan ahead much more now that ProMusica has, you know, become much more prominent and our budget has increased quite a lot as well. So we're planning quite ahead. It often starts with a totally unrealistic and crazy idea that I have, and then I demand that Janet makes this idea a reality.
And then she kicks you in the stomach. Yeah.
I think she's between furious and you know, crazily disappointed in me sometimes. But no, it really works that way the best, because like my role should be that, you know, the big dreamer. Mm-hmm. And Janet has big dreams as well, so sometimes she comes with great ideas. But often
she comes with the budget,
too.
That's what
I mean. Sometimes I come with these over-the-top ideas, and basically Janet and I figure out how to make it work or in which way to make it work, mm-hmm. right? And I, you know, we're really good friends. I mean, we've become real friends over the time. So our work is very easy with each other. You know, we're very honest. It's the great thing about working with friends. You can be very honest.
What are some of the pieces that you've conducted for the first time that you loved, that you really want to keep in the repertoire? New pieces, commissions.
For example, there was the Josh Roman cello concerto that he wrote, and it was a co-commission of both of my orchestras at that time, Illinois Philharmonic and ProMusica, and that turned out magnificent. And actually,
he's
I was
great.
Positively was surprised that it turned out magnificent, because like 6 months before the premiere, or even 5 months before the premiere, he had a piece that he completely scrapped and then wrote anew because he said he went off the wrong direction. I was like, oh that's going to be great.
Can you turn around here?
And it turned out to be just a wonderful piece, and so definitely Josh is somebody who we are looking, you know, to commission again from. And I you know, there were a couple of pieces. I thought like recently the Gabby Montero piece that we played. I thought
she was the pianist, right?
Yeah, she was the pianist. I mean, like it was extremely hard for the orchestra to play.
Well, she's based on improvisation.
Yeah,
is big
exactly.
With her,
that
right.
was her, but with the improvisation. And I just have immense respect for her, not only for her skills on the piano, but for improvisational skills. She's a really good composer. Like her political views, I think, are very, very
amazing.
Sound, very interesting, very important nowadays. And so I was really kind of like very happy how that turned out.
Well, she's an artist who lives in the world. You know, she really lives in the world
and sees
the world in different places.
In some ways, she's an exile, right, from her own home.
Can
right,
I let you in on a secret? Do you want me to tell it? I'm just waiting for... You don't want me
You're
to
You're waiting
say
for
it.
Your husband to shut up so you can talk.
No,
right.
Please talk. Also, no, but the new composition, maybe we...
No.
Okay, I shouldn't tell it.
He's not going to give us... They'll whisper it to me later
soon,
and I'll call
soon,
me up. And
I will tell this
tell you about
soon.
Catherine Donsmeyer, tell us a little... I mean, we've gotten to know David over the years and fallen in love with him, all of us, but tell us about yourself. Tell us about where in Bavaria you're from. You're not from Austria. And your training and what, you know, your work. work, your life?
Thank you. Yeah, I'm from Bavaria, from Weiden. It's a small, very small town. Yeah, I soon went away to, you know, study singing. Took me to Dinkelspiel, Leipzig a year, and then followed by Austria to the Mozarteum. So I was quite lucky.
That's in Salzburg, right?
That's in Salzburg.
And that's where,
and
you
that's
met himself,
where I met him later at the Magic Flute production. So we
were you conducting?
I was.
He was.
The Tampa Flute, and yeah. You were in it. You were.
I was
one of these
Pamina.
Hollywood movie stars. I was
yeah,
conducting. She was singing the main
story.
Role.
Yeah, and very dramatic too. But don't want to go into that one. But it's really hilarious too. But
you two should have your own show.
This yes, is, maybe we should.
I'm going to the men's room and just leaving. This is great.
It was. It was like really in the movies. It was really interesting. It was a student project, right?
Did you stand there and complain about the conductor and, oh my God, does he, you know...
That's why
doing?
I fell in love with her. She complained so much about me that
I'm
I felt like she's
so
great.
Honest.
Right, honest. You know, Furtwängler did it like this.
Yeah. You know, and I can do it better. No, I'm just kidding. No, so, and from there, we took off, you know, to Scotland. He got... They're the position.
You had a gig there, yes.
Yes. Yeah. We soon had kids. So it was all one event followed after another. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I did a lot of singing also in Scotland. So I was quite lucky to find good people and to do leader abend and, you know.
Yeah, you need to do a recital here.
I'm actually working on something.
Okay.
So,
good.
And I want to do also more German songs.
Good.
And
more Lieder, yes.
Yes, Lieder. And yes, so this will hopefully.
And what's coming up? You have a couple of dates coming up, as I recall.
With ProMusica.
Yes.
Really soon in May. So the famous Beethoven. I mean, I have to
We didn't pay her for that plug. We didn't pay her for that.
Oh, I'm glad ProMusica is so kind to invite me again.
The look I just saw, wow. I mean.
Beethoven. So I'm always like, should I sing with David again? Not sure.
You know.
So let's talk about this. And then I saw Beethoven and it's a soprano solo. And I'm like.
Okay.
It's really not easy, and I think I'm talking for all the sopranos out there. It's a very interesting part, the soprano solo.
No, it's actually true. Beethoven
it's so hard.
No idea. The real big difference between Mozart and Schubert on one side and Beethoven on the other side is that Beethoven had no idea how to write for voice. I mean, he writes
well,
so brilliant.
Well, he was deaf too, not to be insulting, but you know.
In any case, but still for the piano, you know, it's sometimes awkward, but you can tell he was a pianist. Orchestra writing is fantastic, very hard, very awkward in some ways, but still you can really make it work for voice. He uses kind of like singers as an instrument. It's terrible writing for voice.
Tell me again what's happening tomorrow night at the Southern Theatre.
Tomorrow night, John Batiste at the Southern Theatre at I forgot
seven
the time. Is it 7:30?
8 p.m.
I think it's 8 p.m.
Before.
It's I should have Janet
just
here.
Ask me.
Don't look
but
at me.
It's amazing. And like I said, honestly, with all honesty, get the last like whatever 50 tickets that are out there.
What are you playing tomorrow night? I know what he'll do a set on his own, but what?
Yeah,
you...
he will do a set with us, then he will do a set alone, and we're gonna play. We're gonna play from Bernstein Candide Overture and one piece from Alessien Suite, and then we will play Rossini Overture to Barber of Seville. Very fast. Very fast program.
David, you have always fast
yeah, but John is front and center of that program.
That's
he's the star.
That's tomorrow night. And then what's after that?
After that, Vadim is coming in April.
Vadim Glutzmann,
he's leading his own program in April. That's going to be fantastic. Vadim is always great. And then in May, we have our season finale. With Catherine singing, me conducting, three other singers, the Lancaster Chorale, which is great, and we're going to do Beethoven 9. And I think,
Beethoven's 9th Symphony?
It's the first time in the history of ProMusica that Beethoven's 9th Symphony
is
played.
They should pay you double to sing that, because that's miserable.
Thank you, say that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a miserable singing part, but it's a great piece. And
but you're the only
but we
one
also do Schubert Lieder, so I think the other thing, so I'm looking forward to
you're the only one they'll be able to hear, which is great, you know, the way it's written.
The others always buried.
You will, the way it's written, you'll drown out the orchestra.
Yeah, you should.
So... For that
great
reason,
piece,
you get
great
double.
Piece. It's going to be a great piece.
Thank
finale.
You.
Party's over, folks.
Thank you so much for having us. So much fun.
Pro Musica Chamber Orchestra is a jewel in Columbus. They have their regular seasons at the Southern Theater. They do a lot of outreach work. David Donsmeyer is the conductor and music director. Catherine Donsmeyer, soprano, sings with them and elsewhere throughout our area and throughout the country and the world. And they live here in Columbus, and their two kids. Oi. So. We thank you very much for being with
thanks
us today.
Thanks so much, Chris. So always awesome. Wonderful talking to you.
This is All Sides Weekend. My thanks to David Brown from the Harmony Project and Dave Phillippe, the film curator at the Wexner Center, and to all of you for listening. Our producer is Mary Lee Williams. Our assistant producer is the peerless Kyle McKinnon. The All Sides interns are Ray Brewster, Missy Glockner, and Sophie Wiener. With video production by Rich Blue and Amber Blue, I'm Christopher Purdy. Thank you.